Okay, good evening, everybody. Firstly, happy whatever you say at the end of Chanukah. Yisro Chag, yeah. Yeah, it's a strange holiday, Chanukah. It really is a strange holiday. It's a beautiful holiday, but when you go into the history and you go into the background of it, it's got its questions which, again, are not really for now, but one day we'll talk about it, because the history of the whole event is extremely difficult. But nevertheless, I think the idea of lights in the middle of the winter, you know, everybody else seems to do it, so I think we're at least on some sort of track to be able to get that right, so I'm happy about that. This evening we're going to go to the letter O, and we're going to talk about, I've said here, oral, the power of speech in Judaism. There's no question in my mind that the world has changed. I mean, we know that it's now, that the whole concept of communication is now so different to what it was even 5 years ago. Go back 15 years ago. You know, I enjoy watching these shows. There's a show at the moment we're following. It's about the history of the Queen of England. The Crown, which is a great show. Fantastic. And they're all using these telephones, which are like enormous. You know, these are not pocket telephones. And you know, you always wonder in those days what they would have made of people standing there holding a small machine and seeing a picture. I called my daughter in Israel today, and there she is. You know, FaceTime, and she's larger than life. Not my mother-in-law. I had to be careful there, so I didn't call my mother-in-law, but I certainly called my daughter. But saying that, it's the world has changed. There's no question. There is now a way of communication which, of course, is just so not just immediate. I mean, that's part of it. But I think it's become more intense. That getting that message out there, even if you make a million mistakes and there's typos and everything, that doesn't matter anymore, all right? Because you've invented a whole language to go with it. Twitter, Facebook, you know, I'm not even up with a lot of the newer, so-called newer technologies, but we all know what this is about. And the bottom line of all of this clearly is about creating communication between people, right? The whole idea of getting the word out there, getting the as I've said here, the power of speech, the idea of getting that message across. Just by the by, it's an interesting thing that this week's parasha, there's a very big question. Really, it was from last week's parsha, but it carries over to this week's parsha. Before the brothers and Yosef sort of find out who they are, who Yosef is, there is the question all the rabbis ask: why didn't he send his father a postcard? All right, he's in Egypt for 22 years. Send your dad a message and say, "Hi, Dad, everything's fine." He doesn't do that, right? Yosef doesn't send a message to his father. It's very strange. And one of the suggestions of why he doesn't do it is because he knows that if he sends a message to his father, he's got to give another whole story like he did the first time when he got himself into trouble with the brothers. He'll have to get them into trouble a second time, because he's going to have to say, they sold me and they dropped me in a pit and I went down to Egypt and Potiphar's wife and the whole story and now who I am. And he's got to go through the whole story. And Yosef doesn't want to put his father through that, because he knows by expressing the speech that he has to say, it's going to cause grief. And he decides, interestingly, not to communicate with his father till such time that his father comes to Egypt, and then they can have a conversation. And he can explain it to him face to face. But he doesn't want to send the message, which his father will interpret whatever way he'll interpret it. And we're back to where we were, the beginning of the whole story, what the Torah calls dibah. Dibar is a report which is not a favorable report. So that's why he didn't contact his father. So again, the whole story revolves around speech. It revolves around communication, or in this case, lack of communication. It's one of the big questions, a lot of answers to that question, but just an interesting thing, which I thought, you know, kind of connects our subject to what we're reading in the Torah at the moment. On the page, this is famous. First quote from Bereishit, where it says, Vayitzer, Vayitzar, I think it is, Hashem Elokim et Adam, God created man, Ofer min Adamo, right, from the ground, as it were, Vayipach ba'apav nishmat chayim, and he blew into his nostrils the breath of life, Vayhi ha'adam lenefesh chaya, man became a living soul. And the rabbis are very perplexed. What does it mean, a living soul? What does that mean? So you'll see here, Targum Unclus, the famous Targum, the Aramaic translation, says Ruach Mamalala. The whole focus of creation at that point was that man became greater than the animal world because we could communicate in the, you know, the fullest way possible. It doesn't mean that animals don't communicate, I'm sure they do, but we have a talking spirit, Ruach Mamalala, that we can communicate with words, with sentences, with all the paraphernalia of today's world, and that makes us, as it were, higher in the creation than the average animal that was created before us. And that's the that's the definition of creation of man. Creation of man meaning the power to communicate, which again is very interesting. So we got here, I've got three issues which I want to talk about. That why and how are words considered so powerful? At the end of the day, why are we so concerned with the power of speech and what it represents, and why is it important for us as Jews, and how can we maximize it to do the positive and not to do the negative? And I think a lot of this will be very obvious, but you know what? It's good to hear it once. It's good to discuss it. I think it's important. We, as I said, we're living in a world where communications have become such a focus. And, you know, you feel pressurized. That's the beauty of Shabbat, that you press the off button. You have 24 hours. I mean, people in my office are envious. They say you literally don't have that phone for 24, 25 hours. How do you survive? And I said, on the contrary, not having it for 25 hours, you do. It gives you a break. It gives you you can recharge your own batteries as opposed to the phone's batteries, you know, and that's really, really, really important. So look at this. These are thoughts which are very well known, and we'll talk a little bit about it. The power of speech. Before I get to this, I was thinking, and one of the movies, I always like to bring in a movie because it's always, you know, it's a recommendation if you haven't seen it. One of the movies which really, I think, had an effect on me for a very long time is the movie called The King's Speech. Now, again, many of you will have seen it. And it was about King George VI, just to explain, everyone didn't see it, that he had a problem, he had a speech impediment. And he couldn't put out those speeches which the Yimach Shemo, Hitler was so maniacal in his speeches and so powerful. And when you listen to them, and you know, sometimes you can hear these speeches, even if you don't understand German, it's so frightening the way that he galvanized the audience. And George VI stumbled over his words. And he had to take a speech trainer, I don't know what you call them, to teach him how to speak. And clearly, for him, that was something very significant, very incredible. The beginning story, I always like to tell this. My father, who died, he was 99 years old, died 3 years ago. I told him about this movie. And had it been 10 years earlier, I would have taken him to see it, because he would have enjoyed it. And I said to him, it starts off in Wembley Stadium, a very big stadium in London. And the king, they're waiting for the king to speak, and he can't get the words out. And my father sat there and said, oh, I remember that. I said, you're kidding me. I said, you remember it? He says, yeah. It said, we switched on the radio, and we were waiting for the king to speak, or the prince, as he was at that time. And it went blank for 5 minutes, and nobody knew what was going on. And it just blew my mind, you know, that he had that kind of memory. Obviously, was an event at the time. The power of speech, no question about it. You know, the way to put things over, the way to present things, the way to make things permanent for us is certainly through the spoken word. Now have a look at this, and go back to the text, because again, all of these ideas are very famous. Pirkei Avot, you can't go anywhere without the Perek. And it says like this, Basar Mamarot Divrei Olam, is halfway down on the first page. We know the word to create, the word Vayivra, the idea of Breshit, is that the creation was done through this power of the word, whatever that means. God spoke, Baruch Shema, we said every day, Baruch Shema, blessed be he who spoke, Vahaya Olam, and the world came into being. Alright, so the power of speech can create worlds. As it says in the famous Pasuk, Mavet v'chaim biyad alashon, life and death, or death and life, it says here, is in the hand of the tongue, meaning in the power of speech. And v'ahavea yochal piriya, those who love it, meaning those who are positive, how should we say, yochal piriya, will eat the fruits. Obviously, if you're negative, you'll also eat the fruits. You'll eat the negative fruits. And world history, as we said, this is why I mentioned it, people like Hitler, Yimach Shemo, his oratory skills were frightening. And he could turn a world upside down just by making these incredibly intense speeches. Obviously, it went with the gathering and it went with the whole performance and everything else. Very scary. I've got here the quote here about the snake. I'm not going to go through it. Famous story in Breshit. And what is it really all about? The talking snake. All right, something that we, thank God, we don't have to deal with anymore, because that was one of the things that the snake was punished, doesn't talk again, whatever that means. And here we've got, I've just underlined it, Vayomer Laisha, and then third line down, Vayomer Anochash. Again, all revolving around the spoken word, right? Everything that happens in the Garden of Eden, which leads to man being rejected and etc., and the whole story, it all comes from the discussions, those words which were being exchanged between the characters at that time. And here I've just pointed out something very interesting at the bottom here, which is the Midrash. Again, all these sources are fascinating, because the Midrash has a very strong statement about the phrase we all know, Shema Yisrael. When we say Shema Yisrael in the davening, it's one of those things that you would have noticed over the years, that we all try to accentuate the word Echad, the word Echad at the end. And some people try and put an extra emphasis on the Chet and on the Dalet. Some say because you should think about Chet, the eight different directions in which you find God, or Dalet, or the four, you know, north, south, east, west, or whatever it may be. All different kinds of interpretations. But the Midrash over here, the bottom, is very interesting. It's talking about Shema. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Im at osah Dalet Reish. What happens instead of saying Echad, you say Acher. Right, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Acher, God is another God, in other words, one of many, then you've got a problem. It says, what have you done? Ata machriv et kol olam kulo. It's as if, or it's saying, not as if, you are destroying the whole world through that one mistake that you make. Because you have, as it were, taken the concept of one God out or away from the world. Incredible. And this is the seriousness which the rabbis gave this. The second line, ki lo tishtachaveh le'el acher, because we know we don't bow down to any other gods. Im atah oseh reish dalet, nimtza ad machriv et kol olam kulo. So therefore, by making the change of the letters, whatever it may be, in that pasuk, so it says le'el acher, lo tishtachaveh, do not bow to another god, and you changed it to echad, le'el echad, do not bow to one god, then again, you're destroying the world. Got to be careful. When the Sefer Torah is written, must be very careful to write it correctly, the Reish and the Dalet. There's a shul in London. Ah, it's unforgettable. They put the Ten Commandments in Hebrew at the front of the shul. So what did they do for the last commandment? What is it in Hebrew? Lo tachmod. You shall not covet. However, the guy who chiseled the letters got the word wrong. He put lo tachmod. Do not be an ass. I mean, it's a good piece of advice. But when you come into that shul, you cannot, for a moment, without breaking into a smile. They got it. Big mistake, the Reish and the Dalet. It's not one of the things that destroy the world, but it's a great talking point. Unbelievable. Lo tachmo, I'll never forget that. And he brings a whole bunch of examples. Again, he goes through all these different kind of things. And we're very serious. We're serious about the word. Let's just turn over. Second page. A slight change of letter can lead to destruction of the world. Wow. You know, this is right scary. The Gemara in Erechin, the Gemara says, Nimsa ha'omer befiv chamor min ha'osem ma'aseh. In other words, what you say can be more strict, more serious than doing an action. Shekei matzina shelo nitchaten gzar din shel avoteinu bamidbar. When the Jews in the desert were condemned, as it were, to die in the desert, el aloshen har. What was it all about? Because they spoke about Eretz Yisrael, they didn't say nice things, right? They brought back the report, Efes ki asa'am, the people are too strong and we're not going to be able to survive, and all the rest of it. And it's Loshen Hara, Shenema, as it says, v'inaso tizeh sepa'amim, and it's a reference to a pasuk there. Improper speech, the Gemara Erechin, this is all found over there, the power of the tongue. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, these Gemaras are wonderful. As I said, a good reminder every so often. I don't dwell on this a lot, but as I said, you know, sort of for the purposes of this year, it's good to have these kind of ideas, to think about them, because we are so focused on words and communication. Let's see what the rabbis had to say. And this Gemara, the next quote on the second page, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yosef ben Zimra, these two rabbis, my dichtiv, what does it mean? Ma yitain lach, ma yosef lach, loshon remia. What does it mean when it talks about remia is the word in Yiddish, krum. It's a perverse expression. What does that mean? Amal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said, l'lashon, kol evoram shel adam zekufim, ve'atam mutal. Really, the tongue is unique. All the limbs of man are vertical. The tongue is horizontal. All right? Interesting thought. And it goes on. Kol evoram shel adam bachutz. Most of the, if not all the limbs of the human being on the outside of the body. Vata mibifnim. You're on the inside. You're inside the mouth. V'la od. Ela sheikafti lecha shtei chomot. God said that the tongue, I've given you two walls of protection so that you shouldn't blurt out things you're not supposed to say. Achat shel etzem, achat shel bosom. One is bone, your teeth, and one is bosom, meaning your lips. Ma yitain lach, ma yosef lach, lach shorimiyo. So how can the tongue get it wrong? How can you say something wrong when you're given all these reminders of how the tongue is different, how the tongue is created, and everything that goes with this, and it's very, very powerful. Shoftim v'shotrim titein lecha b'chol sharecha. So the rabbis say, what does that mean? Hasidic interpretation: Shoftim, judges and guards put on all your gates. And the rabbis say it's a warning about speech. Be careful when you say shoftim v'shotrim. Weigh up your words. Be a shofet. Be a judge before you say something. All right. Don't speak and then sort of, you know. We live in a world where we've got a leader of this country who seems to want to say things without literally putting them in, sort of thinking through what he's saying. It's the most unbelievable situation. I don't know. It's just going on and on and on, and one wonders about this. I'm not convinced that he is absolutely as naive as maybe as people would like to believe, but there is clearly a problem, and it's got a bit less. I mean, if you notice in the last couple of months, it's gone down a bit. We're not quite as fixated about what these messages that he's sending out, but of course that could change, you know, within a few minutes. All that could turn around. Very scary. The power of speech. How seriously this is treated in Jewish thought. We are so careful about what we are saying and how we say it. The importance of what we say. Famous pasuk. We say it every Shabbat. Mi hoishe chovetz chayim. Who wants light? Ov yom lirato. Wants to see good. Netzor l'shoncha meira, guard your tongue from saying evil. Us vatecha midabe mima, and your lips from speaking guile, whatever that means. Next quote in the Gemara, and again these are all quotations which are so important. The Talmud Yerushalmi, who connect on arba devarim shehein nifraim in adam b'lam azeva keren kayemet lo lam haba. There are four sins for which you're punished, both in this world and the world to come. They are avodah zarah, Gilead Roach, Shvichadam, the three cardinal sins that we know you're supposed to give up your life, not to do them, idolatry, immorality, and murder. V'lashon hara keneged kulam. Wow. And I'm not here to give Musa, so, you know, this is not going to be a rally to talk to you about lashon hara. You know, I personally have a very big problem with all those rallies, particularly when it's segregated and people start sort of preaching to the crowd, to the women, to the men. It's one of those things that in the Frum world is seems to be a reaction. Loa Leinu, this terrible event over Hanukkah in Brooklyn. And I don't know how people are going to react. I mean, what should be the reaction, which I hope will be, is sending out very, very strict instructions that when you come to 12 o'clock at night and your Hanukkah lights have been burning for 3 hours, put them out. You've got a 4-hour candle, don't let it burn out. Make sure when you go to bed that you put it out, you can blow it out. Been on for half an hour, the halacha is very clear. Make sure you extinguish it.
Light one halacha.
And if necessary, just one light, and that's enough. And there's something when things like this happen, which are so avoidable, it really breaks your heart. And it's scary. So again, all of trying to sort of bring common sense into all of this, but the reaction of the community is to start blaming people because of sneers and everything else that's that comes about because this, that really drives me crazy because, you know, we're not God, and unfortunately some rabbis think they are, and I don't want to say any more because I'm going on tape. So we're going to say the following. The Rambam codifies this, and think about Al Chait on Yom Kippur. Al Chait, 10 times, and Ashamnu, Baganu. He works it out. The Rambam says 25% of our confession is about what we say. Our lashon hara, our dibur there, and you know, all the sort of things that we've said. It's serious stuff. You know, we are very careful. We should try to be very careful about what we're saying. Look at this comment from the Gemara Pesachim near the bottom of the page. Rabban Gamliel haya omer kol shelo omar shlosha dvarim elu bepesa lo yotzi dei chavato, the famous part of the Haggadah service, just before the chicken soup, as I call it, at that point where, you know you're coming to it, because this is Rabban Gamliel, and he said, you've got to say these things on Pesach. You've got to talk about Pesach, Matzah, Mor. It's not just enough to read about it, not just enough to think about it, you've got to verbalize it. So we are very much into verbalizing. If you've ever walked into yeshiva, one of the things that hits you when you compare it to experience of walking into a library, let's say, I work in Columbia, so you've got the Butler Library, which is unbelievable. It's a fantastic institution, but when you walk in there, you hear a pin drop. It's absolutely silent. Well, almost. A few people obviously talking in the background, but really quiet. Walk into yeshiva, you can pull your hair out. The place is, people are screaming at each other. And in the middle of all of that, you're trying to study, you're trying to learn with a partner. And the whole concept of Torah study is this verbal exchange. You say this, I say that, you think this, I think that, and it is loud. And again, it's about exchanging the speech, the words, in order to come to the truth. We have a very different approach, really, to the rest of the world. Positive aspect of speech. This is one of my favorite quotes. Amarab. Famous rabbi, right at the bottom of the page. Afilu sichat chulin shel talmidei chachomim tzricha talmud. Even when the rabbis make a joke, you've got to examine the joke. We always analyze whenever the Rosh Yeshiva. I was very fortunate. I went to yeshiva where there were three rabbis essentially came from Lithuania. And there was something about those gentlemen that, you know, a few things about them which I, to this day, I find amazing. Number one, that they had the koach to rebuild something which they knew what was lost. They'd been in the Mir, they'd been in Ponovich, they'd been in the original places, and they knew what was destroyed. And they came to America, or they came to England, or they came to Israel, and they rebuilt the Ponovich Arav, and Rav Guvich in Gateshead, and Rav Kotler in Lakewood. These were remarkable men. Because all their chaverim were killed. Every single friend that they had, every Rebbe that they had was wiped out. And they came with a mission, they came with a purpose, remarkable. And the biggest thing for me, in where I was in England, in Gateshead, in the north of England, was the sense of humor of the Rosh Yeshiva. Both Rosh Yeshiva had fantastic sense of humor. One Purim, they made a Purim spiel. I think of it because of Hanukkah. So what did the boys do? And this is a very from place, but Purim, everything goes. So what happened was they sang a new version of Hanerot Halalot. We just finished singing Hanerot Halalot. And in Gateshead, there are two institutions, the yeshiva, which is one end of the town, and there's the seminary, the girls' school, at the other end of the town. So what did they sing in the new version? Instead of Hanerot Halalot, my wife knows this, it's Hana'arot Halalot. These young ladies, Ein lanu rashut lishtamesh bahem, ela lirotam bilvad. We can only look at them, we can't do anything else. This was fabulous. The Rosh Yeshiva nearly fell off the seat. He was just overwhelmed with this interpretation. He thought it was great. I'll never forget his face, he was beaming. And this was great. This was just, they were human beings. You know, and that sense of humor, that sense of connection, that awareness, that come in. It's really, really important. It's really, really significant. It's one of those things that I honestly believe kept those guys sane. Because what they knew about what was destroyed and what was taken away from them was so intense. How did they get up in the morning? This is really the question I have. And they did. And not only that, but they built institutions, Lakewood today. I mean, I don't think Rav Kotler would recognize Lakewood today. And it's not to do with yeshiva anymore. You know, it's become sort of a massive, massive place. Yeah.
What does the Rashi Tavot Tavchet mean?
Tamidei Chachamim. All right, scholars. So, and in fact, I might have the book at home. There's a book called Sichat Chulin Shel Talmidei Chachamim. These kind of off-the-cuff phrases that they would exchange with each other. And it was funny. They really did have a sense of humor. On the same Purim, they gave the Rosh Yeshiva a lemon for Shlach Monot. So why did they give him a lemon? So the answer was that they wrote a note with it. They said, for the whole year, dear Rabbi, you've been kvetching the Gemara. You've been squeezing the Gemara, all the juice out of the Gemara. For Purim, squeeze something else. Squeeze a lemon instead. And this was that, again, he loved these kind of offbeat comments and very amazing. Sichat Chulin. I don't think I should. Really? Which one of the... Oh, yes. Well, that was... Yeah, you know this story. They had a sense of humor. One of the Russian yeshiva, in fact, was a gentleman by the name of Ramosha Schwab. His brother Shimon Schwab was in Washington Heights or in Baltimore, wherever you may have come across him. And they wanted to arrange swimming on Friday morning in the local pool. Because, you could go in at 7 o'clock, and it was empty, and there was no problem for an hour, and give the boys an excuse to do some exercise, which is not a bad thing. And when he's speaking to the guy in charge of the swimming pool, he makes the following request, or question. He said, will there be girls there? Obviously, as far as he's concerned, he wants to know that there won't be girls there. So the guy thought, oh, this is a very forward-thinking rabbi. He says, well, we'll arrange it if you want. And, of course, he got completely the wrong end of the stick. It's a funny story. And if you know how frum this rabbi was, and the way that he and he was beaming when he told this story. He says, this is how not to, to get the wrong, as he called it, the wrong end of the stick, as he used to say in his German accent. Unbelievable. These were wonderful people. And that sense of humor, that sense of the positive effect of a word, a good word, a kind word. They knew it. They got it. They really understood it because their rebbes had it. Their rebbes used to teach them. Their rebbes used to... they were serious men. I mean, they had to deal with incredibly difficult situations. Lithuania was very, very difficult. But at the same time, there seems to have been an understanding, that people had to have a sense of humor. I'm just seeing the picture on the wall. This gentleman over here, Chaim Kanievsky, lighting the menorah. He's got a great sense of humor. He loves mother-in-law jokes. This is what somebody told me. So if you ever go to see him, make sure, if you haven't got a Shiloh to ask him, it's the second one down on the left. He's a wonderful man. A Gaon Olam, he learns 24 hours a day. But, you can actually sort of, exchange pleasantries. You don't have to come and ask him a kasha from Tosfos. You can actually have some sort of conversation with him. He's supposed to be a really very special individual. So, again, I love it that becomes a person's reputation. Not just a great scholar, but also someone you can talk to. Someone you can communicate with. We in Israel, we had a neighbor, Shlomo Fischer. Shlomo Fischer now is one of the big Gaonim in Yerushalayim. He's on the Badat. Why did people come to see him a lot? And he was our neighbor. We literally lived next door. They came to see him because he had a reputation that he'd read psychology. And people were having issues, husband and wife and family issues. They came to see Shlomo Fischer. They didn't want to air their dirty laundry, as it were, in public to go. At that point, this is 30 years ago, they still weren't people to go to like you have today. But they went to Reb Shlomo and they said, you understand the psychology of this. Let me tell you what's going on. And he would listen and he would give advice. Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. So again, this is what I'm writing on the third page in front of you. we see here from Yirmiyahu, we see the effect of words. And I think this is really famous. It says, Chet shochet l'shonam mirma daber bepiv. Shalom et re'ehu yidaber ubekirbo yosim orbo. What is this talking about? Speech is like an arrow. When you shoot that word, right, you can't get the word back. Sometimes it's gone. All right. Of course, if you're in the public eye, oy vavoy, if you say the wrong word at the wrong time, they even have their microphones now. They can listen to your private conversation when you're sitting there waiting for the soup to come. Right. You're sitting at this big, big meal and they're having this conversation, and it's very. Not only very difficult, it's almost that you're in an impossible situation. The same time, we know that there's another expression which words are compared to, which is, the Chofetz Chaim talks about this, a famous rabbi of Radin, he talks about the idea of Lashon Hara, the idea of feathers. He says, if you take a feather pillow, like one used to have once upon a time, and you have these great pillow fights that you as kids, maybe we did, I think I probably did, the pillow breaks and all of a sudden all the feathers go everywhere. And, if you're in a place where it's very windy or you're outside or whatever, those feathers are gone, you'll never get them back. And again, a similar concept, a similar idea, that in terms of the word, in terms of what you're saying, in terms of the trying to control the effect of that word, it's extremely difficult. You've got to be careful before you open your mouth as to what you actually say. As I said over here, recovery from being bad-mouthed can take much longer than from physical attack. No question about it, that if people are really sort of affected by these negative comments. Again, a friend of mine in London, not so long ago, there was a famous singer who was in hospital. She died. Amy Winehouse. And this friend of mine who I'm in contact with in England, the rabbi, he was visiting one of his congregants in the same hospital. And he's in the waiting room there, and in walks Amy Winehouse. He doesn't know who she is. And he sits down and has a conversation with her. Who are you? He says, oh, my name's Amy. And he thought about it for a minute, and he said, oh, I know exactly who you are. And she was in there. She had depression like you cannot imagine. And this is a girl who was sort of at the top of her career, but was really suffering. Maybe what we're talking about here from maybe negative comments. So who knows what can affect people at that particular level of their situation. And he felt so desperately sad for her. And within a couple of weeks of that visit, you know, the news came out that, I don't know whether she committed suicide, I don't know what she did, but it's tragic. I think she did. And this goes on, and again, the effect of a word, a bad word. A teacher can make a child, and a teacher can break a child. And we all know this, but sometimes teachers forget. And it doesn't need more than to say, you don't have to say the teachers that, you know, to the child, you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. But make sure that the child knows that you're encouraging that child, particularly the younger children. The older child, you know, the college student, you've got to be, as they say in the Dugri, you've got to be straight, got to give it the way it is. Again, with encouragement, hopefully, right? But when it comes to the younger ones, you've got to give them that sense that, even if they're not quite there yet, a sense of achievement, aiming to achieve. And that comes from the words, that comes from the gestures, that comes from all of the ability of the teacher to generate that kind of enthusiasm. It's not easy, but that's the challenge of teaching. And if you come in, as we had, I remember Hebrew school was a miserable experience, as it was probably all over the world, with teachers who, I think most of them were Holocaust survivors, they needed a job, they had no teaching experience to speak of, but they were very forbidden to mention, and not blaming them. But they should not have been standing in front of kids teaching, you know, they would hit children. I mean, you know, nowadays it's horrifying what used to go on. And a whole generation maybe was lost because through those schools, I just don't know. But the reality of it is, I'm going to talk a little bit about the second half of the third page, how to behave regarding speech. And this is very, very, again, very interesting sources. Back to Mishnah Avot, middle of the page. Shammai says, do little say little and do a lot. All right, you know that's the guy you want on your committee. You want the guy who is not going to be there pontificating his opinions about everything and then sort of literally doing nothing. You want the guy who is the doer, not the guy who necessarily is the say. You got to you want to consult, of course, but it's about action more than it is about words. He brings here, this is the whole story with Avraham Avinu. And again, what does Avraham Avinu do? And it's Bereshit Yudche, we read it a few weeks ago. I'll just read the story through, again, of the angels, Yukad Nam, at Maim, it's the quotation here, the second half of the third page. And it says, take a little bit of water, Verachtu Raglechem, he tells them to wash their feet. The angels, Vishana Tachat Ha'et, sit under the tree. Vechapad Lechem, Vesadu Libchem, Achat Ha'avaru. In other words, he tells them to come in and zitzach, so sit down. Write that, and they said to him, you do whatever you've said. And at this point, instead of having a conversation and trying to impress upon them the beauty of monotheism, he goes and does. He goes to the tent to Sarah. He says to her, hurry. Shalosh siim kemach solid. Lushu asiu goat guns, make some fresh cake. And he goes to the herd of animals. Where you go, ben bakar rach, so he takes an animal and he shechts it and he brings it. The whole question about feeding them milk and meat, which is a whole discussion which I don't want to go into, but this is pre-matan Torah, so you know maybe it's there's a whole discussion about that. Ubena bakara she'asar, and all of the meat, and it says he took the best part of the animal to give to them, and they appeared as you would say nowadays as three very grubby Arab-looking gentlemen. That's the way they appeared to him, according to most opinions. And for Avraham, it wasn't about appearance. It was about the fact they had a sense of humanity. They were human beings. They talk about Shlomo Kalbach's funeral And I may have mentioned this before, but it's just one of those things that, you know, can't get out of my mind because I'm in New York a lot. And you see the guys, especially this time of year, out on the streets, and they try and get them into the places, you know, the shelters at nighttime at least. And when he died, there were about, I think, a dozen guys who you would describe as street people, standing at the funeral. They'd come to pay their respects. And they were asked, what are you doing here, you guys? And they explained that the rabbi, whenever he saw us, he was so kind to us. He always had a good word, and he always, maybe if he had a few bucks, he would give us some money. And didn't have money all the time. He wasn't famous for his wealth, but whenever he could. And, you know, this was something that made such an impression on them that they decided, you know what, we've got to respect, out of respect, go to his funeral. And it was an unbelievable thing. It was a remarkable thing that people talk about. They still talk about it to this day. Mishnah Avot at the end. What is a goylem? Right. I love this. Love this Mishnah. It's the second quote from the bottom of the third page. Shiva devarim begoylem v'shiva bechacham. Chacham. Interesting. It's going to tell you what the chacham is, the wise person, and then the opposite will be the goylem. And I don't want to translate the word goylem. I'll leave you to make your own translation. Chacham eino medaber b'fnei mishu gadol mimenu bechacham minyan. You know when to shut up. All right, you know when to be quiet. Because if somebody is there who is greater in wisdom and in knowledge, etc., make sure that you defer to the person who knows more. And Ve'enech is totally very chaver. It's all about speech. Who's a chacham? He doesn't sort of cut off somebody in the middle of their words. Ve'enech nivhal l'ashim. And he's not confused when he needs to answer. He's got his ideas clearly in his mind. Sho'el ki'inyan ha'meshiv kalacha. He asks the right question. He gives the right answers. Ve'omar rishon, and he answers first question first. Achron, the last question last. In other words, he's an orderly sort of guy. Amar shelo shoma, omer lo shamati. This is great. How many people? And this is a big complaint in the against teachers. Maybe it's something which has changed. I don't know. But to hear a teacher say, "I don't know," the teacher can actually admit, you know what? I don't know. I've always done that, but I'm told this was not always the case. Teachers felt once upon a time that they had to be the paragon of wisdom. And if they did not know, they would never admit it. And this sometimes became a big challenge and a big problem. And a chacham is someone who says, "Lo shamati, I don't know. I don't know the answer." Modal emet, and he agrees with the truth. In other words, he doesn't come to fight. If something is true, you have to go with it. V'chilufeim begoyin, if you're the opposite, and you know it all, and you interrupt, and you know you're full of your own ego and everything else, then the Mishnah says you're a goyin. Thank you. That's an interesting concept. Clean speech, clean language. The bottom, this famous comment from the Gemara, says the bottom line here. Domar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. All these sources. I just wanted to share the sources because they're so beautiful. It says Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says la olam al yotzi adam davar meguneh mipiv. Sort of express something which is not correct from your mouth. I don't think that they would have maybe put it so clearly like this if they would have been driving cars. One seems to change one's whole personality as soon as you get behind a wheel in terms of reaction to what people do. Particularly in Israel, it's one of those places where sometimes you just need to express yourself, but hopefully you're contained within a certain limit of expression, but we all know what happens sometimes. And it says Shahari Okama Katuv Shmona Otiot Vlohoti Davama Gunami Pip. And there's a whole expression which is used in the Torah. It talks about Behema Tahara, Behema Shelo Einena Torah. It talks about an animal which is pure and an animal which is not pure. Could have said an animal save the word. You could have said instead of three words, Asher Einena Tahara, could have said Behema Tameya, an animal which is impure. But it used three words instead to set up the principle, don't say something which is negative when you can do it in a more, how should we say, genteel way. Put it that way. If you look at the last page, Loshon Nekiya, clean expression. This is a big problem because, you know, when we're talking about the influence of the street, particularly when it comes to television and everything else, there is a standard or lack of standard, which is now sort of filtered through, where, you know, you have to ask yourself as a parent, do you want your child not only what's going on in the TV, which is one thing, but picking up, and particularly, even if the stories are good stories, but the language which is being used at the time is very disturbing. This has now become some almost a classic acceptance. And again, you ask yourself the obvious question of, do you really want your kids picking up these expressions because you don't want them to go to school and start using those expressions? That would not be a good thing. And again, it's one of those challenges in the world we have, maybe to explain to kids, you know, how that you have to be careful and control what you have to say. It's a challenge. It's certainly a challenge for parents in the 21st century. We've got the whole idea of replacing temple ritual because we say words instead of sacrifices. That's a whole thing that we say every day. That ki'ilu, ki'ilu ikravti, there's a whole thing that we say in the davening, that if I say this, it's as if I have done it. All right, and that's also a whole idea. And of course, what I didn't want to talk about, but is so massive, the literature, Lashon Hara, the whole problem of how careful we have to be when we are talking about the other person, if ideally to avoid it completely. My teacher, this is a great story, I had a teacher in London who was a student of the Chofetz Chaim. He actually studied in the yeshiva. And he was 13 years old at the time. And he said to me, he said, I want to tell you a little story. He says that we all were wondering, that the story was that the Chofetz Chaim, Rabbi Kagan, was deaf in his old age. He couldn't hear, right? And there were no hearing aids or whatever, and he just couldn't hear. And therefore, it wasn't the fact that he could switch off from Lashon Hara, because there was always a tradition that they said, as soon as people started saying negative, he wouldn't hear it. He just would be completely blank to it. Or was it that he was just hard of hearing? He just didn't hear it because he had no hearing. So this Rebbe of mine, a Dayan in London, who passed away a number of years ago, he said, we put him to the test. He said, I was davening from the Omer, and I got to a point which is known as Baruchu, where everybody bows. And what I did, he said, was that I said it, but I said it in a low voice. If he was deaf, then he would not have heard it, and he wouldn't have reacted, because he was facing away from the audience, right? He was facing towards Mizra. And if he didn't hear when I said the word, he would never have reacted immediately. And I was watching, and he reacted perfectly. He said, that rabbi was never, ever deaf. He said, impossible. He said, don't believe any of those explanations. The reality was, amazing way, he could just switch off. He could just turn off the sound. I can't explain it to you, I don't know, but there's so many stories about that. And again, it's a lesson on how careful we have to be, when is it allowed. There's so much study to be done about the whole issue of Lashon Hara. I certainly can't go into that at this point. I want to just finish really with one or two comments. One comment which is the power of a word, a good word. Again, if I've told you this story, I apologize, but I'll say it again because it is a fabulous story. What was her name? Eliach, Yaffa Eliach, who passed away again not so long ago, was a teacher at Stone College. Wonderful lady. Survivor from the Holocaust from Lithuania. And if you have never been to the Holocaust Museum, the whole presentation of the hall of all the pictures, it's all her work. A remarkable lady. She put out a book many years ago called Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust. And she interviewed various survivors, including a Rebbe in Brooklyn, the Blujer Rebbe, Rabbi Spiro, who lived to be over 100. He died a number of years ago and survived the war miraculously. And one of the stories which, again, I always come back to because it's the power of a word. What happened was that he was in a lineup. And the lineup was L'chaim, L'movis, he knew. And he was in very bad shape. He was already, his health was not good. And he got to the end of the line and he thought, this is it. You know, and he was prepared, Shema Yisrael, he knew this was it. And the Nazi who was doing the selection, he saw him, and he recognized the Nazi. And the Nazi looks at him, and the rabbi, without hesitation, says, Guten Tag, Herr Muller. This Herr Muller, the Nazi, was his postman. He was the mailman. And he delivered his letters, because Rabbi Spiro lived in Berlin for a number of years, and he delivered the letters every day. And Rabbi Spiro came to the door, and when the postman came, he always said to him, Guten Tag, Herr Muller, and he would say, Guten Tag, Herr Rabino. They would exchange pleasantries, maybe at Christmas he would give him a bit of a bonus, who knows? And that went on for years. Here he is, the Nazi, deciding life and death. And the rabbi's reaction was, Guten Tag, Herr Muller, went white. He saw him, he recognized him immediately, he said, Herr Rabina, and he pulled him out of the line. He says, you're in the line, this is not a good line. And he sent him back to the barrack and he survived. One word, just said a good morning. One good morning, you just don't know what that can achieve. Chofetz Chaim is famous, he used to come into shul. His eyesight was really weak at the end, you know, towards the end of his life. But it doesn't matter, he would say, Guten Tag, Guten Tag, Guten Morgen. He would say it wherever he, because he knew that that word, that people were expecting him to greet them, even if he couldn't see them, even if he didn't react so clearly, but it doesn't matter. He had to say that word of encouragement, that word of giving people strength. I want to end with a thought from the Chofetz Chaim, because I think this is something special. He died in 1933. And he was looking at the world around him, and he said, even in his day, the technology was beginning to take off. You know, they had, obviously the car had developed, and he knew about that, he knew about the railways. He'd heard about phonographs, as he called them, you know, recording machines. All the record players were already available, etc. And he asked the question, he says, what can we as the Jewish people learn from this? And he writes about it. He says, modern technology is there to give us strength in Emunah. He says, sometimes we're weak in faith. We, for instance, in Perkei Avot, it says, God records every word, right? And how do we know that, right? 100 years ago, who knew? Now we've got the recorder, and we've got the cassette, and now we've got the MP3s and all the rest of it. And the idea that there's a constant recording of what we're saying and what we're doing is no longer a surprise to us, because technology has just helped us to understand what the rabbis were talking about thousands of years ago. And on that basis, I would say, maybe we need reminders today. We see the world of communication becoming so intense, becoming so strong. And maybe for the Jewish people, it's something that we need to think about. How we communicate with each other. I speak about this a lot because it's disturbing. How do we speak to each other? How do we communicate? How do we share ideas with each other? If you are coming from, let's say, a less religious perspective, I'm coming from a more religious perspective, let us come together, and if we're going to talk and share ideas, let's do it in an atmosphere of mutual respect. And if we're going to share ideas with other religions or with other people representing those religions, again, out of mutual respect, because that word is the way that we are judged. And maybe with all of the increase in the technology about communication, this is a message to us to be so much more careful. I cry when I see the reports from Israel, and I see that the yeshiva boys are again laying down in the streets, and they're cursing the police, and they're saying terrible, terrible things. And it's Jew against Jew, and I'm listening to this, and it's on Arot Sheva, whatever, J Post, whatever you read on the internet. And I'm saying, you know, Mashiach comes and he looks at this and says, you, the religious Jew, are screaming abuse at another Jew. May not be the same religious intensity as you, but he's a Jew, he's a Yiddish neshama. I can't come. Mashiach says, I can't come to a world like this. How can I bring you salvation when you're not speaking to each other with any sort of respect? And that's a challenge for us, and maybe that's what it's about. You know, obviously the world has got its own issue with communications, fine. But as Jews, maybe we can take that message. The word is still very powerful. Use it properly, don't abuse it, don't make it negative. Try, with the power of speech that we have, to create a better world, to create stronger communication, and to create respect. Kavod HaBriyot, it's what it's all about. Respecting each other, having that sense of human dignity, giving that other person that same sense of dignity, can't get anything more important than that. That's a whole other presentation, Kavod HaBriyot, but not for today. I'll leave it at that. I think this is so, so important. These ideas, these concepts, bring them all together. Just to be careful in terms of what we're saying. Realize the King's speech. Think about that. How those words were going to transform not just the country, I would argue, in the end. Those words transformed the world. Amazing. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. Any questions?
Next one
is January 24th. January 24th. And we're talking letter P about prejudice. But unfortunately, prejudice of Jews. And a lot to say about that. It's, I think, a lot of a generational discussion that we'll have at that time. God willing, snow willing, and all the rest of it. So, January 24th. Bezrat Hashem. Thank you, everybody. Thank you very much.